Do you ever wonder who has the latest breaking news around the NBA? What about who has the deepest staff of writers that cover the NBA on the internet? It's RealBallInsiders.com. Shout out to them for making this podcast possible. Four Seasons Podcast. I'm Ryan Mogjosh. To my right, Zach Double. What's up, Zach?
I'm back. A strong back. We're in this thing. Enjoying the pod so far. It's been a lot of fun. We're growing at a good rate. We've had a couple very different guests, and that's what I've really enjoyed. We got a lot packed up the next couple weeks here, including a four-part season preview coming up, but I think you guys are going to all like our guests coming along.
Absolutely. Today's guest, we got a former Mizzou basketball player from 2008 to 2012. He is currently an NBA scout, a commentator for SEC Network, and a co-host and analyst on Sports Radio 810, Jarrett Sutton. Jarrett, how's it going, man?
It's going well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. So we've talked previously, and your come up, should I say, was you were a basketball operations coordinator for the Warriors D-League, is that correct?
Yeah. It was first year out of college. Mark Jackson was the head coach there. So it was actually, I joke around, it was the year before they ended up winning their first finals championship with Steve Kerr. So I was there just a little too early, I guess, to see him hoist a trophy.
Maybe you can take credit for a little bit of that dynasty that we're building now.
Right. Yeah, so, exactly. Me and the White Mamba, you know, me and Scalabrine can take all the credit.
Absolutely. So, I mean, when I look at you, when I look up your stuff and the things that you've done, you are a very hands-on guy. You're involved in not just one thing, but a ton of things, and you do them well. Kind of talk about how it is balancing all the stuff that you're involved in, whether that's being a scout or commentating games for the SEC Network, being involved with Mizzou over there.
Well, the easiest way to answer your question is you got to have a deep love and passion for the game. I think it's easy to get lost, especially in basketball. You know, you see it in high school, you see it on the AAU circuit, you see it in college, you see it in the NBA, you see it internationally. There's a lot of people that try to be around the game that are in the game sometimes for the wrong reasons. And no matter if you're working for a team, if you're coaching, if you're a grad assistant, even if you're a player, you got to love the game and you got to have a deep passion for it to learn and grow. I look up to a lot of people. I think that's another big thing for me is I've had great role models in different areas, whether it be in college, whether it be with the Warriors. And I got very close with Brian Scalabrine, which is the reason I got into broadcast, actually. When I left Santa Cruz in the D-League, I had an opportunity to go to Des Moines and work for their Iowa D-League affiliate is the affiliate of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I remember talking to Brian Scalabrine, and we had a very open discussion, and he said, you know, if I really want to grow in the business, and I needed to meet more people. I love the game, but as you know, in basketball, it's a lot about relationships. Mm-hmm. And so that really got me thinking, and I was very – sometimes it is luck. Sometimes it is just something falling in your lap. But I think the only way you create luck is putting yourself out there and taking opportunities and taking cool. a risk. I lived in a hotel room in Santa Cruz for 7 months, and it was not ideal. But it was such a great learning experience. And you know, when you're in the D League, and now it's going to be the G League, it's not glamorous. You're really grinding. Whether you're a player, coach, or personnel, front office, you're fighting to get to the next level. And the reality is, there's 30 teams, and there's only a select few positions, whether it be on the coaching front office or even on the player side. You know, I got a lot of former guys that I played with that I think are really good professional players that would love to play in the NBA, but it's so tough to get in. But to answer your question, I mean, the broadcast is great. I'm big on preparation. I prepare a lot. I think that's where you have to love it. You have to have a deep appreciation and respect, too, for the game. I mean, I respect so many people that do what I do, even, you know, from guys like John Sundvold, who broadcasts and I think does an unbelievable job, Fran Fraschilla, I think is one of the best, Jay Billis. I mean, you got to respect the craft. You got to respect guys ahead of you. And one day, hopefully, you get there. But just because you're not there yet or you're working your way and I always love the comments of success, and to have success, you have to be patient. And it's so true. You just have to work and continue to grind and grow and be respectful and have the right attitude. And if you do that, and I think take on challenges and take on opportunities, I think the sky's the limit. So that's the long-winded version to answer your question.
Appreciate that, man. So you did have life a little glamorous. I mean, a hotel room definitely sounds a lot better than a couch, wouldn't you say?
That's true, yeah. And when the organization, you know, I think I was young, too. It helps when you're single and, you know, no kids. And I was right out of school. I had never lived outside of Missouri. And, again, I met Kirk Lakob, the assistant general manager of the Warriors. His dad is Joe Lakob, who owns the team. And I met him at the Big 12 tournament at Sprint Center. Oh,
interesting.
And it ended up having good conversation. Had an interview with Travis Schlenk, who's now the general manager of the Atlanta Hawks. And again, like this niche in the NBA, it is a fraternity. I mean, everybody knows everybody. You know, people talk, and it's not just players. It's your video guys, it's your scouts, it's your you know, everything from your financial department trying to do your salary cap analyst. I mean, there's so many conversations that you have. But I think that meeting with Kirk in Kansas City, didn't really know the guy all that well. We built a relationship. The next thing I know, I'm flying out and living in Santa Cruz in a hotel for 6 months, which was honestly one of the better experiences I've had. And hey, got to surf, got to learn how to surf. So I'll take that all day.
Awesome. I learned to surf a little bit in Australia myself. I mean, good place to start your career out in California. Lucky guy there. So real quickly, just touch on, I mean, I'd like to hear your thoughts on where you think the G League is going. If you think it's in a good place, and yeah, what your outlook on the G League is.
Well, it's amazing how far it's come over the last 3 or 4 years, dating back to when I was in Santa Cruz. You know, during that time, I remember having numerous discussions, and I was fortunate enough to be on the operations side with our D League team at the time. So I was on those conference calls weekly with the league office, met a lot of different people around the G League, just having to deal. Because in the G League, the roster turnover, it seems like it's daily. I mean, guys are coming and going, and you're building your roster. You're bringing guys from international back to the States to join your roster. I mean, you're trying to have a grasp of everything because you just don't know what's going to happen. And then with the NBA clubs, with the 10 days and having call-ups and sending down guys on assignment, I mean, your roster just continues to evolve. But I think with the goal being all 30 teams having an affiliate is where we're headed, and we're close. Mm-hmm. I think, too, it's important. I think Golden State, and I'm biased, other teams do this really well, too, but Golden State was the first team to really provide resources and support. I mean, Bob Myers was coming down to Santa Cruz to be in our draft room for a D-League draft. I mean, not a lot of GMs do that. And to be able to – and again, Santa Cruz is probably a good hour 15 from Oakland, where Golden State's headquartered. So I think with us, it was very much – we had great transparency with the big club. And that Bob loved to send guys down to us because he knew if he was sending them down – not only were we having practice, but we were putting them through extensive individual workouts. I mean, we had those guys, and they could work out twice a day if they wanted to. I mean, it was kind of – there were no rules on how – and that's the whole point of the D-League and now the G-League. So I think where it's going with every team having an affiliate, but also having an affiliate in market. I take the Oklahoma City Thunder, for example. You know, they did have the Tulsa Blue, or I can't remember what their name was before that, but now they're the Oklahoma City Blue, and they actually play in their practice facility in Oklahoma City. I think that's really important because you want to be close. Because anytime you're trying to pitch the G League to keep a guy here and to keep him from going overseas, there has to be some level of interest there. And the only way they're going to have interest, especially if the money's not there, is I'm going to be around NBA guys. I'm going to be seen at practice. I'm going to have an opportunity to play games in front of NBA executives and scouts.
Right.
And I think pumping more money into it is ultimately what's going to sell the G League even more for guys to stay, because there's so much talent internationally, and they go for, and quite frankly, I don't blame them, for bigger contracts and bigger opportunities to make more money, to support their families. And I get that. But I think where the G League's going, I think teams are starting to realize the importance of it and really trying to pump more resources into it.
That is good. And kind of along the same lines as the G League evolving, you got players just trying to make it. And when they're close to the NBA organizations, that's their best shot rather than go overseas. But along those same lines is the Summer League. And you got to experience that firsthand. I believe you were in Vegas, correct?
Correct. Yeah. I was down there working for the NBA League office. Had an opportunity. I had a friend of mine that worked in the league office. I actually met during my time in Santa Cruz. And now he works for the NBA. And asked if I wanted to come help him out. I was doing a lot of media work, a lot of behind-the-scenes analytics, statistical work for each team, each game. An unbelievable experience, first of all, of where Summer League has gone since it started. I was talking to Warren and a guy named Albert Hall, who they created Summer League 17 years ago, and they talked about how Summer League's really kind of built all this steam after the draft. And I mean, let's face it, the NBA is in such a great place when it comes to excitement. You look on social media and anytime there's any sort of big trade or free agent acquisition, you look at the Kyrie trade with Boston and Cleveland, and Major League Baseball is having pennant races, and you flip on the national ESPN or Fox Sports, and that's all they're talking about is the trades. And because they're just so intriguing, and there's so much to them, and with the salary cap increasing over the last 2 years, the money that's around for players. I think LeBron James changed the way we look at free agency and the way players view free agency. It's so different now that I think that just leads into Summer League. And when I was down there, I mean, seeing guys like James Harden and LeBron and I had a good conversation actually with Devin Booker in Vegas. Obviously, his dad played at Mizzou, and see where he came from. I wish he would have been a Missouri Tiger, but obviously he goes to Kentucky. I think that might have been a better decision for him. But
look at Missouri while he was there?
Did he look at Missouri prior to going to Kentucky? Is that what you said?
Yeah, while you're on that.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I don't think it was necessarily one of those things where I kind of think it was the discount, the hometown. I'm gonna give a favor and go visit. But I think he was going to Kentucky no matter what. It was great to see Jordan Clarkson out there, a guy that I was a part of his recruiting visit when he was at Tulsa. Great to catch up with him. He's doing fantastic. Doesn't surprise me, honestly, how he's really transitioned to the NBA, because he is an NBA type of athlete and plays that position at the point guard, kind of off the ball, and is really evolved into a very versatile player. And then to see guys, Jabari Brown, who played at Mizzou and has had great success overseas and is trying to get on an NBA roster, was picked up by Santa Cruz, actually, last year, which I was able to be a part of that conversation with my old coach in Santa Cruz and really push for him to sign Jabari, because Jabari's just a flat-out scorer, and Jabari ended up averaging 30 points a game in the D-League to finish the year. He was one of the more improved players in the D-League, and had an opportunity to play in Summer League. And I think, too, to give people an understanding of Summer League, you had the Lonzo Ball, all the hoopla around that. De'Aaron Fox, when you look at it, De'Aaron Fox is such a good athlete, and the NCAA tournament with him and Lonzo, and Lonzo didn't play in the Summer League game. There was so much storylines behind that. People were trying to talk about Lonzo's shoes, which brand he was wearing. Yeah. It was fascinating. But I think two people need to realize it's an opportunity for guys that have been drafted to go get some minutes, go get some experience, go play in an NBA style with the shot clock and NBA coaching. To put on like an NBA jersey for once and just because, you do. And then it's guys from overseas that are just trying to get on tape and trying to be looked at by scouts to try to get some sort of, training camp deal, or trying to get out looked at for potentially signing on somewhere. So I think, you look at a guy like Alex Caruso, who signed with the Lakers, and Alex played great down there. Every time Lonzo wasn't in the game, he was making plays. So it was fascinating to watch, just because it's not the NBA, but it is so intriguing because fans came. I mean, sellouts, and there were a couple days where no tickets were available. I'm getting stopped in the hotel lobby trying for people trying to get tickets from me, and I have no tickets. All I have is the credentials. So it was really fascinating. I think it's great for the league, and I really would urge people, if you're a hoops junkie, I mean, it's a $20 ticket. It's any seat you want in the house, general admission, and you get to see all sorts of games and a lot of guys that are coming from the draft, and even guys that you kind of grew up watching, or guys that come from your favorite college programs are there, and it's just fun to kind of see them lace them up and go at each other, especially when the NBA season's in the off season.
Absolutely, yeah. Me and Zach have talked about it before in the past that the summer league is something that we don't want to miss on anymore. Like, last season was the last season that we're not going to be down there.
Damn right.
But it's funny that you mentioned Jabari Brown and Jordan Clarkson with your ties to Mizzou. My last year, my senior year at UCM, we played a preseason game at Mizzou Arena, and those two were on that team along with Ernest Ross. You remember those guys?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was a little
Keon Bell on that team, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think I was a little bit – you were after that, weren't you?
That was the year after. That would have been 2012, 2013. So that was the year after I left.
Oh, damn.
I left after 11-12.
I was going to say, that would have been really cool to play against you and then see you now today, and we're sitting here doing a podcast together. It would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be great. I actually played UCM – I think it was my sophomore year, Kim Anderson. I think it was an exhibition game we played in. So I played against UCM once, but I was a sophomore. And,
oh, wow. Okay,
it was good to play the NCAAs. We also played Northwest, too. So,
oh, yeah. They're always really competitive.
We had some MIAA action, for sure.
Very nice. I like that.
So did you guys think those Jabari and I forget the other guy's name were going to be pro-level players?
Well, we got the scouting report. Kim Anderson is our coach, and we got the scouting report on Jordan Clarkson. He's like, hey – this guy can get buckets. He plays a big point guard, but he will not play a lick of defense. So that was our plan. Go backdoor on Jordan Clarkson all day.
I was always frustrated because, you know, when I look at my senior year, you know, we went 30-5. We had a rotation of about 7 or 8 guys. We were undersized. And that year after we left, I mean, we had Alex Oriaki commit, won a national championship at UConn.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrence Bowers was coming back from an eight. Ernest Ross was built and just strong and athletic.
Yes,
and
he was.
Keon was an unbelievable athlete. Jordan. And then you had Jabari, who was a five-star that had transferred to us that could just fill it up. And I always ran scout team with Keon and Ernest and Jabari. And it was fun to kind of beat up on, and at that time, you know, we were winning a ton of games and people knew about us. And, right. And when we were running scout teams, it was fun to play with those guys because it was just easy. I just spot up in corners and it was fun. And it doesn't surprise me that what Jordan's done, but I do look back on that year after we left, and I just felt like Mizzou was in such a good place. And mm-hmm. we ended up making the tournament, and we lost to Colorado State, I think it was. But we should have been a lot better than our record showed because we had a ton of talent, and we had NBA guys, and we had just – you know, I think you guys would – and, you know, Ryan, I think you'd agree. When you got scorers in college that can score in all three phases, that can take the ball to the rim – can dunk a ball, can go above the rim, can pull up, can shoot it from deep.
Absolutely.
I mean, those are they're so valuable because mm-hmm. when you have that type of versatility, it's so tough to guard. I mean, you have to give up something. You know, it's great defense, but sometimes it's better offense. And
yeah,
those exactly. guys could do it, but, you know, defensively, they would just break down constantly and lost a lot of games they shouldn't have.
Right.
Yeah, so after watching Summer League a little bit and following the college game pretty closely, as you do, or very closely – who's your early pick for Rookie of the Year, and who are some sleepers you got lined up?
So that's a great question. I really liked this draft this summer, and you know, I honestly, when you look to even 2018, and you look at the guys that are going to be at the top,
loaded.
It's loaded. But when I was down in Vegas, there were a couple guys that really stood out to me. One was Dennis Smith Jr. That was drafted by the Mavericks from NC State. You know, when he was coming out of college, everybody knew he could score. He had NBA athleticism. He's a yeah. point guard. But let's face it. I mean, he comes from a program. His head coach gets fired. They don't win a lot of games. You know, a lot of questions were out there of, you know, did he quit on the team? Can you really count on this guy? And when I watched him in Vegas, I mean, he is so incredibly athletic and gifted
yeah.
and can just electric fast, quick, very versatile, but I mean, explosive beyond measure. And that to me was eye-opening, because even watching Lonzo Ball, I mean, Lonzo Ball's a guy I wasn't really high on when I was evaluating him leading up to the draft. But when you watch him in person and you watch him go against guys that are good college players and you see him square up a guy and take the ball off the dribble and get to the rim in one dribble with ease, you start to realize the intangibles of some of these guys. I really like De'Aaron Fox. I think he's going to be good. I've kind of really put a lot of investment into him. I talked to the Kings a lot about him going into the draft. They loved him, so I wasn't surprised to see him take him at five. But if I'm going Rookie of the Year, I'm really leaning towards Dennis Smith as a sleeper. I really like him a lot. I think Jason Tatum's going to be fantastic, but I think he's going to have more, I think similar to just kind of one of those, like a Brandon Ingram, for instance, where a guy that you know he's going to be really good, but he might have some setbacks. There might be, hopefully he stays healthy. And Tatum's such a great athlete, but I still think there'll be some growth and some adjustment with Tatum. So we'll see. But I like those guys. Some sleepers. I love Justin Patton. I evaluated him a lot at Creighton. He is young. He's like silly putty. he's like silly putty. And he can step out. He's your prototypical center that can pick and pop, has a tremendous vision, is a great passer. And I really like him. He goes to the Bulls, but, traded to Minnesota. And he just fits kind of in that system of, look, what do you need from me? Do you need me to go rebound? I'll go rebound. Do you need me to spot up and knock down 17-foot jump shots? I'll do that. I'll be aggressive. He just has all these different abilities. And then Donovan Mitchell was fantastic out in Vegas. He was, I think, the most surprising player that really jumped on the radar of a guy that is going to be an outstanding scorer and a guy that the Jazz, I think, really like because of, everything going on with Gordon Hayward leaving. And I could go on for days about the small market situation in the NBA. But I know they're really happy they got him. I know when they selected him, I think there was some thought that Gordon Hayward wasn't coming back. So I'll be curious to see how he does. I think he's in that sleeper category as well.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds good. I honestly could stand behind those. I'm all in on DSJ. I think it's literally a three-man race, maybe four. I just think everybody picks Fultz and Simmons, but I think they're both going to take away from each other. I think if either one of them, it's going to be Simmons. But I'm all in on DSJ and Lonzo Ball. I also like Josh Jackson. And they're just because of minutes, opportunity, and they'll put up the proper stats. There are a lot of sleepers. I definitely think this is a very deep draft. I think the guys you all touched on, I'm on board with you. Absolutely.
I think another guy I want to throw out there, too, that a lot of people were talking about in Vegas was Caleb Swanigan.
Yeah.
It was a guy that I liked him at Purdue. I've watched him here in the NCAA tournament in Kansas City. But, man, he was dominant out there. And it is summer league, so you have to take everything with a grain of salt. But he just looked fluid and looked like a natural NBA-sized power forward. And he's got the body to go up and rebound. He can get you a double-double. Mm-hmm. We'll see how he transitions into the NBA because a lot of these guys – they are still young. They are still going to the best league and the best basketball you can play. And they're going up against better athletes. And it is going to be a growth spurt for them. It's who's going to evolve quickest and who's going to pick it up, who's going to develop more in other areas of their game. But I really like Swanigan as well.
I love that as well. I think, but I'm worried about their logjam in Portland. Too many power forwards, especially drafting Zach Collins. Big, I can go on. There's a ton of them there. I was looking down the list, top 20, top 25 scores in summer league. Didn't see too many SEC guys up there.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things. Like I looked at the league and guys going coming out of the draft. I mean, so much was made of Malik Monk. I felt like he got so much talk and Bam, obviously with the Kentucky ties and Kentucky, and Kentucky's, they're always going to be on college game day. They're going to be on national television. They're going to be talked about. You just can't not turn on the television and not talk about Kentucky during college basketball season.
Right.
But it was interesting to watch. And I got asked this about even Wesley Iwondu, a Kansas State product with Orlando, because, some of these guys, they were the guy in college, and then they get to the NBA, and it is a different game. It's a different speed. It's a different pace. It's different sets. It's different coaching styles. And I think it's sometimes really difficult for guys, and you even saw it right out of the gate in summer league, because I would say even with Josh Jackson, the first game I watched, the first half, and I've seen Josh play live 15, 20 times, and the first half in his first game at summer league, he looked nervous. He just looked like he was so discombobulated. I mean, he'd let guys drive past him. He just looked like he was going through the motions, and finally he started to kind of grow out of that and realize, hey, I'm an unbelievable athlete. I'm really good too. I need to be aggressive. So it's just it is amazing the mindset that guys go through just even right out of the gate when they get to summer league, because they realize that, okay, we're not in college anymore. It's an NBA style. You're treated as an adult. You know, you're in Vegas and you're a professional, and you're supposed to act like a professional, and you're supposed to produce. So the pressure kind of starts, and that clock starts to tick for you.
Absolutely, yeah. To touch on one more, I have a dark horse for Rookie of the Year. It's not popular. Okay. It's a very pitch black, jet black dark horse.
Well, it's popular in the Four Seasons.
Okay, yeah. It is popular Four Seasons podcast. Just basically because of opportunity and the team that he's on and the fit that I think he fits there. John Collins.
Yeah.
He played five games in Vegas, and he looked like a freak. He could jump out of the gym. He's very explosive, good rebounder, averaged 9.2 boards a game. And 15.4 points a game in summer league. I think that him in Atlanta is a good fit, not only because of his athleticism, but also because Ersan Ilyasova and Mike Muscala are above him.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah, that's a great pick. I like that. When I saw Atlanta take John, I wasn't surprised, because you know Travis, having worked with Travis at Golden State, he loves athletic forwards. I mean, he lives off those guys. Sometimes to a fault, but I really liked John Collins a lot. He was a top guy. You know, watched him in the NCAA tournament. And again, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Swanigan in a way that he's just a dominant presence in the paint. I love that he demands the ball. He makes himself bigger. And sometimes with forwards and centers, they got all this size and strength, and sometimes they play really small. And John plays massive. I mean, he just is a brute force, and you can't teach strength. Jordan Bell kind of jumped off the map for me with Golden State, watching him at summer league, and he's not as skilled as John, and he doesn't have near the skill set. But you can't teach strength sometime, and just all raw athleticism and explosiveness, and John fits that profile. So I like that. I think that's not a bad pick. You know, he's a very talented guy. Another guy that I'll throw at you, that I'm just going to watch and see, because he has been hurt, and he had and still has a really good skill set. I think it was a good pick. Is Harry Giles. A guy that, again, he falls in that forward center, stretch forward center, can be really good coming back from injury. Is he going to figure it out? He's going to be a 2-3 year project. You'll probably see him some in the G League. I want to see how he does, because I think him with the Kings and what they're doing, why not? You know, he does have a great upside, but there is some risk there. But I do want to see how he does, because I think coming from where he was before he went to Duke, man, he was so talented. Yeah. And we'll just see how he develops and grows. Mm-hmm.
Man, I thought that was a great trade by the Kings. I mean, getting Justin Jackson and Harry Giles. I personally, I'm not a big Justin Patton fan. I know you referenced him earlier. I'm a big Timberwolves guy, and I wanted somebody more polished, somebody more seniored, ready to go right away. And Justin Patton's already injured, so that doesn't help at all.
Right.
And I don't think he's going to see the floor at all this year, except maybe in the G League a little bit. And our bigs aren't even that great when you get past Taj Gibson, really. I mean, Gorgui Dieng off the bench. Aldridge is the next man up, though, Patton's going to be fighting with. But yeah, that Kings trade Justin Patton, or they traded Harry Giles and Zach Collins essentially for Justin Jackson.
Yeah, well, and even, you know, I'll even take it a step further with what the Timberwolves have done with Tom Thibodeau. I mean, what an offseason they've had. I think they're one of the more intriguing teams to watch in the NBA. You know, he's got Taj back with him. He's got Jimmy back with him. I thought there might be some interest there to try to lure Kyrie in a trade, but I just think you'd have to give up a lot. You know, I think Karl Anthony Towns is fantastic, and you partner that with Wiggs. I mean, that's a really good team to watch, and I think again, talented, still up and coming team, still young, but you add some veteran pieces to that, look out. I'll be really curious to see how Thibodeau turns that around. And again, we're going to hear all this talk about him playing guys a bunch of minutes and driving them into the ground, but Tibbs gets a lot out of his guys, and he's a terrific coach, and there's a reason why I think Minnesota's got a chance to be really good.
Yeah, I'm right. FC in the West, here we come. I'm really loving the offseason. This is the most excited I've ever been for a team besides the 03-04 Wolves. Sprewell, Cassell, that team was a blast. I know you've been referencing your scouting career a little bit. What does that all entail right now? Are you putting a lot of time in that yet, or is that kind of on the back burner with your SEC and radio career?
Yeah, so it's very much kind of intertwined with the broadcast. I am broadcasting for the SEC Network, and really during college basketball season, I'm broadcasting, I'm recording every game, and I watch a ton of film, and I go back and rewatch games. I'll do reports on games that I'm at. I'll also watch a lot of tape and do reports on guys. I cover the SEC and Big 12, and then I cover some Midwest schools. I try to get to every Midwest school I can to watch practice, because practice, I think, is essential in scouting. Number one, to talk to coaches and build the coaching relationships, but to watch a guy go through a workout and watch a guy handle coaching and watch a guy handle criticism. This is something I touched on earlier about just being out in Vegas and seeing a guy live. It's so beneficial to see a guy in person as opposed to watching on film, because you get a way better perspective.
Absolutely.
Of what that player is on and off the floor, and watching him in timeouts and watching him handle fatigue. All those things are so important. But right now, it's been much of an offseason. I've been more focused over the summer. Last year, I did a lot of free agency work. This summer, I was actually focusing on a lot of the AAU prospects, a lot of the talent in the state, both in St. Louis and Kansas City, into Iowa with the Iowa Barnstormers AAU program. They got a lot of good talent. Just trying to get an understanding of some guys in my region. I very much am a regional scout. I don't do a lot of national stuff. I do more Big 12 SEC. And then branch out to other programs in the Midwest, Wichita State, Creighton, Nebraska, Iowa, Tulsa. Having the contacts there with Kim English being there, but now having left and gone to Colorado, but Frank Hayes still there. So, again, scouting is all about relationships. Still, it's knowing coaches, it's having those discussions, and then for me, it's working with different scouting contacts throughout different organizations in the NBA. I am still in some discussion this offseason with a couple teams to maybe come on full time. Right now, it's more of a part time role. It's more reports and projects, special projects as assigned as a consultant. I'm really hoping that'll continue to bump up and hopefully one day have an opportunity to either regional scout or work for a front office. But in the meantime, still broadcasting. I love broadcasting, it's a ton of fun. I like kind of looking at a game and breaking it down and watching film and putting together almost a scouting report on both teams and then watching a game as opposed to pulling for one team. You're competing, and now it's just taking a broad picture of what's going on. And it's really good, and it's challenging, and it's not like football and baseball either. It's so quick. You've got to be thinking and on the go and be able to add in your two cents and really break down the game. And describe it well with your play-by-play partner, who my partner's Ben Arnett, who does a great job. It's fun, but it's very much intertwined, and this summer's been a little different. Having worked Summer League for the first time, that was a big part of my summer, and then what followed, doing some just AAU projects on the side, just trying to get a grasp of guys here in the region.
So speaking of scouting, let's talk about your boy, Michael Porter Jr. He is, as everybody knows that's listening to this, some people have him at one, some people I've seen have him at two, maybe even three, but I'm thinking he is the absolute top prospect in this 2018 draft class. Were you a part of scouting him before he got to be such a big name, and kind of talk about what you're looking forward to watching MPJ at Mizzou?
Yeah, so, I know a lot's been made of Michael and then Marvin Bagley, who committed to Duke, and now those two guys are at the top. You know, Mohamed Bamba going to Texas, he's in that category. There's a lot of big names out there at the top. Mm-hmm. But I think with Michael, you know, I watched him, honestly, when I was a player, he was just a little kid running around the weight room. His dad was an assistant with the women. And I mean, he was kind of, he hadn't filled out yet into his body. He had these long arms and long legs and just gigantic feet. And he was still a pretty small kid, but he was a gym rat. I mean, he was always around, and you'd show up to like a, you know, a night meeting before a game, and he'd be in the gym just throwing up the ball with his brother. And it would be Jonte. And now Jonte's still sprouted and just a dynamic, big time prospect, big time player for us. But I think with Michael, I mean, so much has been made of the last two number one overall picks. When you talk about Ben Simmons, first and foremost, you know, a guy that was at LSU, didn't really do much there. You know, LSU didn't make the tournament. And, you know, I think a lot made of, you know, just because you're a number one overall pick and you're the top talent in college, doesn't mean your college program is going to do well. And you look at Markelle Fultz with Washington, you know, Lorenzo Romar gets fired. And, you know, we saw how talented he was, but man, they were bad. You know, they couldn't guard, they had talent, but they couldn't put it together. So I know that Michael Porter and Ben Simmons have had a lot of conversations. I think the amazing part about Michael is just how he's almost been a recruiter. It's almost been like NBA free agency. Because, you know, he knows all these guys, and he's a great kid. I mean, I can honestly can say that he is such a well-rounded kid. He's well-spoken. He's respectful. You know, a high-character individual. And, again, with so much hype around him. I mean, the guy walking around campus, he's taking pictures with students and professors and faculty. I mean, he is the guy. He's the big man on campus, and he's kind of the savior of Mizzou basketball. But I just like the kid he is. I like the makeup of him off the floor. I love that he's a great teammate. I love that he's unselfish. He has an incredible basketball IQ that is so undervalued because he really understands the game, and he knows how to score. He knows how to use his body. And he's gotten so much better, too. When I saw him as a freshman at Tolton, you know, he was big. He could score. But when he got to the AAU circuit, you know, he got pushed around a lot. He wasn't that strong. He was very scrawny. And now he's really filled out. I mean, he looks stronger. He looks the part. He's worked on his ball handling. You know, when the ball's in his hands, he can do so much with it. I mean, he's great in pick and roll. He can shoot it. He can go to the rim. He's an excellent passer. And he's a once-in-a-generation type talent that Mizzou has never seen. So I think when you look at him and where he could take this program, Mizzou could have an unprecedented year. But it doesn't mean, you know, we're going to the NCAA tournament and we're going to the Final Four and we're going to win a national championship. This is still baby steps. This is still a program that hasn't won a road game in 3 years. And, you know, Michael's a terrific talent. They have a great recruiting class, the best recruiting class in Mizzou history. But they still got a gel, and guys that are on that roster that are returning are still going to be an integral part of this team. But for Michael, the sky's the limit. He's going to be a one and done. But I really believe that he wants to be good, and he wants Mizzou to have a great year, and he wants to take them back to the NCAA tournament if they can.
You got it, man. That's awesome. You basically took a lot of the questions right out of my mouth getting into them. I love it. So, I mean, touching on Markelle Fultz and Ben Simmons, I mean, how vital and valuable is it to you and these GMs you're talking to around the league that the top college prospects are coming out winners?
Well, I mean, it's the intangibles, right? I mean, you want to have a guy that in his makeup, number one, he loves the game, and number two, he loves to compete, and number three, he hates to lose. I mean, if you're a competitor, you know, some of the greatest players of all time, they hate to lose. I mean, it literally drives them crazy. They want to be on top of that mountain as best they can. And I think when you look at coming from, you know, losing programs like Markelle and like Ben, you know, they're very talented, but you've seen it too from Ben. You know, I saw him in Vegas. He worked out every day in Vegas. He spent every day in Las Vegas. He watched not just Philly, but he watched a lot of games, and he would stay there and he would work out every night and did it very, you know, humbly. And he'd walk around and sign autographs. But I just felt like he's realized and matured that you know, when he was at LSU, I'm not so sure winning was important to him. And I don't think it was. I think right. he knew it was a one stop and he's gone. And I think the messages he's giving to Michael Porter is that wasn't the right mentality. And guys question that. You know, when you're being interviewed in Chicago and you're going to, you know, team workouts, pre-draft workouts in markets, those are going to be asked of you. I mean, yes, you're very talented, but those teams at the top, you know, they could trade out of that pick. They could trade. They could, you know, go ahead of you and take someone else. And if you want to be that top pick and you think you're the best player in the draft class, yeah, you know, your talent speaks. But also it's your makeup. It's the character in you. You know, it's that the Steph Curry example. I think Steph's such a great example for players in high school and in college, especially high school, that weren't highly recruited of, you know, just because you're labeled one way in high school, that doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you're still growing and evolving, and now Steph's one of the best point guards in the NBA, and NBA champion. I mean, I think it's sort of trying to pick at who you are as a player and what drives you. Do you love the game? Do you want to be great? And do you want to take an organization? Can we invest in you? Can we take you at the top and count on you to put this weight on your shoulders? Because it's a lot of pressure. And we've seen guys at the top, guys like Anthony Bennett, that sometimes you feel for him, but it's a ton of pressure to be a top pick. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's this conversation, too, of the Sam Hinkie era and Philadelphia tanking and losing for picks. And that's opened up this new conversation in the NBA where, you know, now we're talking about draft reform and what's going to happen with that. It's a very interesting discussion, but I still look at it as if you are a competitor and you are an NBA player and you're at the highest level of basketball, it better piss you off if people are labeling you as not a winner. That should bother you. And I think Michael knows that he doesn't want to be labeled like that. And I think that is where we're at. I don't think Markelle Fultz wanted to be labeled like that. But I just feel like now once you realize that, okay, I'm a one and done, I'm going to the next level, that's what you do in college, what you do in high school, what you do as a kid, all that's being evaluated. That's all a part of the scouting process. You know, so it's not going to leave you. People are going to ask questions. People are going to dig and really try to figure out who you are. And you want to be the best version of yourself. And I think that's so important if you're a top pick.
Absolutely. So a two-part question here. I think you'd have just as good of a pulse on this as anybody, it sounds like. Quanzo Martin, how well do you think he's going to help develop him, and do you think he's going to be a big part in Michael's stepping stone to his career, or is it just going to be a one and done season that doesn't really mean a whole lot because he's already so talented? And on top of that, the second part of that question is, how good do you think Mizzou's going to be, the team around him? Do you think Michael Porter Jr. is going to be able to make his teammates better and lead them to the tournament?
Yeah, so I think with Konzo, he's done such an incredible job so far. I mean, you look at this is a basketball program that when they finished the year last year, the odds of them winning the national championship was 250-1, and now it's 20-1. Wow. And the transformation that they have had, and in college, again, you guys know this, recruiting is essential, and relationships, especially for Mizzou, having played at Mizzou, it is important to have a grasp of your state because there's good talent in the state. There's good talent in Springfield, in Kansas City, in St. Louis, in Columbia. There's really good talent there. And then you broaden your horizon and you have different regional scouting ventures. But what he's done he just got Torrance Watson committed just last week. And this is a kid that was committed to Ohio State, really good player. Then he's in the 2018 class. And a guy from St. Louis, and a guy that, you know, flips and was not even on Mizzou's radar at all in years past. And so I think he's understanding, he's making the most of this Michael Porter Jr. experience, because it is an experience, because all signs are pointing to it's going to be 1 year with Michael Porter Jr. And Michael Porter Jr. is taking it as, I'm going to go, I want to play with a lot of my friends, I'm connected with the AAU circuit. I've played against all these guys on my AAU team. You know, I want guys to play with me. I mean, he brings Kevin Knox to campus. I didn't think we really had a strong chance to get Kevin Knox, but he comes to campus, and that immediately just, I think, rejuvenates your recruiting. And it's recruiting's all about, yeah, winning cures all. They're going to have to show that they can win. Mm-hmm. But I think where they're at now, And then talking to guys with Mokan and the St. Louis Eagles and Team Ramey, you know, they've already told me that what Konzo's done and where Mizzou's at right now is almost at the top when it's in on guys and guys really believing in Mizzou. And they believe in Konzo because he's a man of impeccable integrity. I've had a chance to sit down with Konzo multiple times, and he's just an intense, real, natural guy, by the book. He's perfect for Mizzou because he fits that blue-collar lunch pail mentality. And that is, I love that. I love that about that. That's kind of how Kim Anderson is. I think, Ryan, you'd agree. That's how Kim was.
Absolutely.
I love that. I love that about Kim. So, you know, that's important. So to me, I think when you look, to answer your question, the second part of your question, this year is important. Yeah. There's so much predictions about it. Where are we going to go? I get asked all the time, what do you think their ranking is going to be? How many wins are they going to get? Really, the sky is the limit for them. It just depends on how they're going to handle adversity. This is a team that's thrown out their offense of game plan from the last years. They have a whole new offensive structure. Konzo brought in Charles Mann, who was at Iowa State. They have very much a free-flowing offense. It's very pick-and-pop space, attack off the dribble, you know, play off each other, read and react. I think that's good when you got versatile guys that can do multiple things. And it's not so much Michael Porter Jr. either. It's a guy that I really think is going to be great and has an opportunity to be a one-and-done is Jeremiah Tillman. He's put on 15 pounds of muscle.
Okay.
Another guy that decommitted from Illinois and commits to Mizzou, flips. And he has been, I think, the reports I'm getting out of Columbia this summer is he's got a chance to be one of the best big men in the country. And that's saying a lot because he is raw, but he is a freak of nature, above the rim, shot blocking presence. And Mizzou hasn't really been that. We weren't really a shot blocking team when I played. We've never really been a shot blocking team. We've always been kind of guard heavy.
Mm-hmm.
We have to shoot the basketball really well. And they brought in shooters as well. I'm really excited about CJ Roberts. He's a Kim Anderson recruit. I'm really excited about Blake Harris. Those guys can be 3-4 year guys. You know, so we could have the one and dones, but we also have guys that are going to be around. You know, I'm obviously very high on Porter. I'm going blank. Jonte Porter, excuse me. I'm very high on Jonte because he reminds me a lot of Trayvon Bryant for Mizzou fans. Big body, provides a very different aspect. Jeremiah's more long and lanky. And Jonte's just strong and tree trunk legs and just brute strength. Really wants to be forceful inside, can step out. It's just going to be a different roster. I mean, you're talking about 5-6 guys that are above 6'10". So we're going to have impeccable size. It's going to be a different roster than we've seen. But again, I look at Terrence Phillips. I look at Kevin Puryear. I look at Jordan Barnett. Those three guys that are returning, they still have to be an impact. You know, I think Terrence Phillips has a chance to lead the SEC in assists. That's his style of play. He is a pass-first point guard, and he can kind of take on that role again. So what do I see this team doing? I could see them making the NCAA tournament. You know, I can see them winning, you know, 25-plus games. But they're going to be tested at some point in non-conference play. I could see them going to Utah and being down 8 or 9 late in the second half. How do they respond?
Yep.
You know, how do they dig themselves out of holes? I want to see what this team's made of. One that I think we'll really have an understanding of what Mizzou basketball can be next year because, you know, there's so much excitement. November 10th, couldn't get here fast enough for Iowa State. It's going to be one of the bigger non-conference games we've seen.
Love it.
And so it'll be exciting to see.
Excellent. No, that was great. Appreciate that. So last two questions here before we wrap up on Michael Porter Jr. and move on here. Biggest room for improvement with his game that you see and what he can work on this year. And then what you think his biggest comparisons are. I mean, I've seen Kevin Durant, Paul George, Joe Johnson, even like Carmelo. But I think obviously Durant is probably the closest I see. I don't know what you guys.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He definitely reminds me of Durant, not just because of the look and
right.
You know his size and length. I mean, he's kind of a replica of Durant. He's got a pure stroke, too. I mean, it's straight up, straight down. He's got a great release, very efficient shooter, can shoot it from deep. He's got range. I mean, he's so tough to guard at his size, at 6'10", that can stroke it. I think most important for him in improving – two things. I look at the offensive end. His first step, I think he's got to get more explosive. You know, I think if a guy is squaring him up, defending him, that can move really quick laterally. I think if he puts the ball on the floor, he's so long that his first step isn't as explosive as maybe it should be or it can be, just because of that size. And again, he's more lanky. But with that being said, he's a good ball handler, so he can turn to the basket, post up, fade away, do a lot of those Kevin Durant same type moves. And he's got an array of moves where he can make a lot of adjustments. He's got a lot of counters in his game, which I think is, when you're a really good player, you got to have counter moves. You got to have pump fakes, shot fakes, step throughs, all those things, and he has that. But I think the first step has to get more explosive. Once he does that, he can get to the rim and he can finish. Continuing to get stronger, that's another big piece for him, is continuing to add strength, you know, eat right, be healthy, and the injury prevention, because he's got to stay healthy, and he's shown that, but he is long and lanky, and he's an aggressive kid. And then on the defensive end, he is a good defender, but he can go a next level. And again, you know, I think that's an area that doesn't get, anytime you look at a top prospect, you don't sit there and watch game film of him defensively. But I have, and I've seen him play defensively. He is engaged. He does want to be a good defender. He's really good in switching ball screens. He can guard a point guard. He can really move. It's being around the rim and being able to and handle stronger players and being able to contest shots at the rim. I think that will be another area for Michael to improve on. But again, all the upside, and really a great kid that has an unbelievable skill set that we haven't seen in the state in a long time.
Absolutely. And speaking on today's day and age in the NBA and Michael Porter Jr.'s versatility, the more you can do, the better. He can guard 1 through 4, maybe even 5, with him being, 6'10", 6'11", with his length. He is going to be a monster on both ends as he grows up. But after all that SEC talk, we got one more topic to talk about. Kind of like a
fun exercise. The one I'm looking forward to most.
Yes, absolutely. So I gave Jarrett a little bit of homework over the night, and I told him to select a starting five and a sixth man of his favorite SEC players that are currently in the NBA. Zach and I also have a team, but we're going to start with Jarrett's starting five, point guard through center, and a sixth man. So go ahead.
Okay, so at the point guard position, I have John Wall. We're going to stick with the Wizards theme, and I'm going to put Bradley Beal at my two.
Mm.
At three, this was an interesting one. I was going back and forth on this. I would say, too, if we're talking about active players, I have Devin Booker in there. I was going back and forth with him and Joe Johnson because I'm a big Joe Johnson fan. Joe's more at the end of his career. And then I got Anthony Davis and Karl Towns to finish out the five. And then DeMarcus Cousins as my sixth man. I did have a couple other sixth man thoughts to that. One of my favorite players comes from Arkansas, Bobby Portis. He was one of my favorite kids to evaluate. And I love Bobby, too. I hope he has a big year this year for the Bulls. He's unbelievable work ethic, one of the best work ethics I've ever seen. I went to multiple times watching practice with Mike Anderson, my former coach at Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
An unbelievable type of kid, works his tail off. And so I have him in that conversation. And then I did almost throw in my boy Damari Carroll to put into a six man. If healthy, Atlanta Hawk Damari Carroll. He is a really good six man because he does so many things on both ends. He's been hurt over the last year. He's had some nagging injuries, but he's got a great opportunity in Brooklyn, so I have him in that list as well.
I knew you'd have Damari Carroll in there. He's your boy.
I got to put him in there somewhere.
Absolutely.
And to your point, he will never be in there because he's always hurt.
That's right. good comeback. I like that.
So for me, I mean, the question I thought, I mean, we went by was favorite player, so I kind of did two quick teams. My favorite players, I did John Wall at the point, then I went with a couple shooters, Bradley Beal and Devin Booker, a little smaller backcourt, but then I went DeMarcus Cousins, my favorite SEC player by far, is Karl Anthony Towns. It doesn't even get close, honestly.
Yep.
And then my sixth man is the arrow shooter, Cupid himself, Jamal Murray.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes.
I like it.
Then I wanted to create a non Kentucky team. I wanted to get a little original here. Get away some names that people might not have heard of. that are from the SEC. So my point guard out of Arkansas is Patrick Beverly. Love that.
Oh, that's a great one.
And then Georgia, my shooting guard is going to be KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
New Laker.
Yep, and then I got my small forward from Texas A&M, Chris Middleton. And then we get some size and versatility in our LSU rookie forward, Ben Simmons. And then my favorite player on this team out of Florida, two-time champion, Al Horford. And my final six man is going to be DeAndre Jordan out of Texas A&M.
That is a stacked team.
That is a stacked team.
See, I have a blended. Yep. I didn't go full Kentucky, but I didn't go no Kentucky. It's a clean sweep for our point guards and shooting guards. I have John Wall and Bradley Beal as well. But nobody mentioned my starting small forward, my favorite small forward, and partly because he is looked upon as being overpaid in the league.
Chandler Parsons.
He's never healthy, but I'm a big, big Chandler Parsons believer.
Got it right.
Oh, there it is.
I love Chandler Parsons. I loved when he was at Florida. Big-time shot maker. 6'10", big body. If he could stay healthy, he could play a stretch four, maybe even a three. Before he was getting injured for the Houston Rockets, he was putting up 15-7, being a very, very consistent role player for them. So I'm not off the Chandler Parsons bandwagon yet. I'm going to be there forever.
I like that.
Ben Simmons at four. I think he's going to blow up this year. People don't realize how talented of a passer he is. Unbelievable passer. And I saw that 2 years ago in Summer League. And then Kat is my starting center. I think he is something truly, truly special. Sixth man, Zach said it, Jamal Murray. I really like how explosive he is. I like his perimeter shooting. I think him and Gary Harris in Denver is going to be very phenomenal. Yep. And then honorable mention sixth man. I'll go seventh man. You said it, Jarrett. ISO Joe Johnson. I love what he did with Utah last year.
Guys, we missed one name. So all your names are great because I had some other names kind of scattered with DeAndre Jordan. And I love Horford and Beverly. Pat Beverly, any sixth man with Pat Beverly, I'll take. But we missed one guy, comes from Kentucky. Eric Bledsoe is another guy that you got to consider. He's another Kentucky player. I don't mean to continue to add Kentucky players to the list, but he's a guy that I looked at as well. It's almost like you can put all these guys together, just create an SEC NBA team, and have half of them be from Kentucky, and you're good.
Yeah, I know. As we wrap up, Jared, I mean, care to share what your upcoming SEC schedule looks like, where you're going to be broadcasting a little bit?
Yeah, so, you know, we got practice starting up here soon. It seems like the days are ticking down. We're just less than a couple months away. So I'm going to start watching practices once those hit early October. So until then, just kind of getting ready. This is the time of year, honestly, where it's almost stressful because everybody's asking you what your projections are. I'm doing some SEC predictions on the league. The SEC is going to be terrific, by the way. I'm so excited to watch SEC basketball. Auburn's going to be good. I mean, there's like 8 or 9 teams that have a ton of talent. It's going to be really a fun league to watch, considering 3 years ago the SEC was in really bad shape. I'm looking forward to that. But I'll hit a couple non-conference games for Mizzou basketball. I'll also have an exhibition game for them. That'll be my first game coming out. And then I'll call them venture off into more non-con league play after that. So all I know right now is I'll do a few non-conference Mizzou men's games and as well as their exhibition games, along with 810. And I'll also be hosting a show on Monday nights on 810 with Stephen St. John called Countdown to Big Monday. It'll be an hour-long show. We'll have different NBA guests and college guests, coaches, things of that nature, leading up to what will be Big Monday once league play starts, but we'll get that cracking in 2018.
Absolutely. Big Monday is huge. I can't wait for Big Monday's startup.
It's hard to believe how quick, you know, the summer period flies by. It seems like yesterday was in Summer League, and you know, with the free agency and the draft and the trades, and honestly, too, what we haven't touched on is, for me, the movement around NBA front offices with GMs and firings, and that's been wild. It really has been, to see people move around, and it's going to be a lot of different looks, not just on the floor, but up in the booth and up in the press box as well for different front offices.
Oh, yeah. One last thing, Jarrett. I see that following your Twitter feed that you're keeping up with the Rally for Ryan campaign and what how Ryan Luce is doing.
Yep. I very close with Coach Brad Luce, who is still working for the Mizzou Athletic Department. And if any of you have had time to spend with Brad, and I still call him Coach. I can't not call him Coach Luce. But he's just a terrific guy. So easy to talk to. Just a bright, smart guy. And you feel for him because this has been such a journey with Ryan. We last year were calling games where, Coach Luce wasn't even on the bench because he's going to New York and Ryan's got, treatment or something's going on or they've had a scare and it's an emergency situation similar to what took place this past week. Last time I talked to Coach Luce, Ryan was in great spirits and she was really on her way. And I think this has been a setback, but the whole what's going on with Rally for Ryan and honestly, when you look at the past 2 years and we've had the Rally for Ryan game, Mizzou's 2-0 in those games. So she's a strong girl and really inspiring, to be honest with you, just to see her fight. But that family is strong, and what they've done too, just for children with cancer and that whole initiative, it's been remarkable and it's been great to see Mizzou fans and the community of Columbia and the surrounding areas of Kansas City and St. Louis really come together and raise money and really try to beat what's a terrible disease for kids around the country.
Right, yeah. See, Brad was my coach at UCM. He is the one man that recruited me to attend UCM and play basketball there. So Brad and I are not only really great friends, but a coach as well. And what him and his family are going through shows amazing toughness and perseverance. And that's exactly what Coach Luce installed in me every single day, whether that be on the court or in the classroom, which everybody knows, him included, that I needed that help in the classroom. But what Ryan has overcome is directly reflected on her dad, Brad Luce, and my thoughts and prayers are with the Luce family.
And I'll add to a quick story. We called a game in Columbia last year, and at halftime we had a package on Coach Luce and on Ryan. And I remember thinking, as a dad, and I don't have kids, I'm not married, but to be coaching basketball, it's so cutthroat, and you're supposed to win and get high level recruits, and to go through what was a difficult ride as a coach for Mizzou, and they lost a lot, and dealing with your daughter's fighting for her life, and Coach Luce was always and still is to this day so positive. I mean, he's always upbeat. He's always motivating other people. Anytime you ask how things are going, he doesn't sit back and sulk. He always takes it head on, and it's amazing to me. I think just what the example he is, and to your point of strength and perseverance, and it's not just in him; it's in his whole family, and it's in Ryan as well. And it is inspiring to see and be a part of.
Absolutely. Well, Jarrett, thanks again for joining us. It's about time that we got this all scheduled out. I'm glad we could do it today. And early on, covering my NBA career, you've helped me a lot. And I'm looking forward to, in the future, still learning from you. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I was really looking forward to this. And Ryan, thanks for having me. I've listened to a few of your podcasts as well with other guests. You guys do a great job. So it was fun, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
Jarrett, thanks a lot, man. It was a great time. We spoke on Luka Doncic 2 weeks ago. It was great to touch on Michael Porter Jr., two of the top prospects coming out. We would love to have you on coming up midway through the season again to refresh on these topics and see where we're at with our predictions.
That sounds great. Thanks again for having me, guys. It was fun.
Yep. See you, Jarrett.
Take care.
All right. Take care.
Special thank you to our partners, Last Word on Sports, and Did You See That?